Thereafter, Sidudu made a swift recovery. She and Fen grew closer each day. All the others liked her, Hilto, Nakontu, and Imbali, but Meron more so than all the rest. With the help of Bilto and the other villagers of Mutangi, they were able to escape from the house during the day and spend time in the forest. Meron and Hilto continued to train Fen in archery, and soon they invited Sidudu to join in. Meron made her a bow, which he matched carefully to her strength and the span of her arms. Although small and slim, Sidudu was surprisingly strong and showed a natural aptitude with the bow. Meron set up a target for them in a clearing in the woods, and the girls shot against each other in friendly rivalry. "Pretend that the mark is Onka's head," Fen told her. And after that, Sidudu seldom missed. Her arms strengthened and developed so swiftly that soon Meron had to build her another bow with a heavier draw weight. After much devoted practice, she was able to send out an arrow to the mark at 200 paces. Mero, Hilto, and Nakonto were all inveterate gamblers and laid wagers on the girls when they shot against each other. They urged on their favourite and haggled over the allowances given to Sidudu. Because Fen had been using the bow for so much longer than Sidudu, they made her shoot from longer range. At first this was agreed at 50 paces, but gradually it became shorter as Sidudu's skill increased. One morning they were holding another tournament in the clearing. Meron and Sidudu teamed against Hilto and Fen. The competition was keen and the banter raucous. When out from among the trees rode a stranger on an unfamiliar horse. He was dressed like a field worker, but he rode like a warrior. At a quiet word from Meron, they knocked fresh arrows and stood ready to defend themselves. When the stranger saw their intention, he reined in his mount and pulled aside his headcloth that covered his face. "By Seth's dung-smeared buttocks!" Meron exclaimed. "It's Tinat!" He hurried forward to greet him. "Colonel, something amiss? What is it? Tell me at once." "I am pleased to have found you," Tinat told him. "I have come to warn you that we are in great danger. The oligarchs have issued a summons for all of us to appear before them. Onka and his men are hunting for us everywhere. At this very moment they are searching every house in Mutangi." "What does this mean?" Meron asked. "Only one thing," Tinat told him morosely. "We have come under suspicion. I believe Onka has denounced me as a traitor, which, of course, by Jarian standards I am. He found the bodies of the Trogs you killed when you rescued Sidudu, which infuriated him because now he is certain that you are hiding her." "What proof has he?" "He needs none. He is closely related to Lord Acre." "His word is enough to condemn us all," Tinat replied. "The judgment of the oligarchs is certain. We will be interrogated under torture. If we survive that, we will be sent to the quarries or the mines, or worse." "So now we are all fugitives," Meron did not seem worried by the prospect. "At least the pretense is over." "Yes," Tinat agreed. "We are outlaws. You cannot return to Mutangi." "Of course not," Meron said. "There is nothing there that we need. We have the horses and our weapons. We must take to the forests. While we wait for Taita to return from the Cloud Gardens, we will make the final preparations for our flight from this accursed place back to our very Egypt." "We must leave at once," Tinat concurred. "We are much too close to Mutangi. There are many places in the remote hills where we can hide. If we keep moving, Onka will be hard put to catch up with us." They mounted and rode eastwards. By late afternoon they had covered 20 leagues. As they climbed into the foothills of the range of mountains below the Kitangula Gap, a herd of large grey antelope with long spiral horns and huge ears broke cover and ran across their front. Immediately they unslung their bows and gave chase. Fen, on Whirlwind, was the first to catch up with them, and her arrow brought down a fat hornless female. "Enough!" Meron cried. "There is plenty of meat on it to last us for days." They allowed the rest of the herd to escape and dismounted to butcher the carcass. As the sun set, Sidudu led them to a stream of clear sweet water. They bivouacked beside it and grilled antelope chops over embers for dinner. As they gnawed the bones, Tinat reported to Meron on the most recent disposition of the forces loyal to the rebel cause. "My own regiment is the Red Standard, and all the officers and men will come over to us when I call them to arms. I can also rely on 2 divisions of the Yellow Standard, which is commanded by my colleague Colonel Sangat. He is one of us, Then there are three divisions of troops who are responsible for guarding the prisoners and captives working in the stopes of the mines. They have had first-hand experience of the brutality and inhumanity with which the captives are treated. They await my orders. As soon as we begin the struggle, they will release their charges, arm them, and bring them by a forced march to join us." They went on to discuss the mustering point and eventually decided that each unit must make independently for the Kitangula Gap, where they would all come together. "What force will the Jarians be able to deploy against us?" Merrin asked. "Although they will outnumber us 10-1, it will take the oligarchs many days to muster their troops and march against us. As long as we can achieve initial surprise and a head start on the pursuit, our forces will be of sufficient strength to fight a rearguard action as far as the boatyards at the head of the Kitangula River. When we get there, we will seize the craft we need. Once we are on the river, it will be an easy run downstream to the great Nalubale Lake." He paused and looked shrewdly at Merrin. "We can be ready to leave within 10 days." "We cannot leave without the Magus Taita," Merrin said quickly. "Taita is one man," Tenat pointed out. "Hundreds of our own people are in danger." "You will not succeed without him," Merrin said. "Without his powers, you and all your people will be doomed." Tenat thought about it, frowning morosely and pulling at a strand of his bristling beard. Then he seemed to reach a decision. "We cannot wait for him forever. What if he is already dead? I cannot take the risk." "Colonel Tenat," Fenn burst out, "will you wait for Taita until the rise of the harvest moon?" Tenat stared at her, then nodded curtly. "But no longer. If the Magus does not come down from the mountain before then, we can be sure he never will." "Thank you, Colonel. I admire your courage and good sense," Fenn smiled sweetly at him. He mumbled with embarrassment and looked into the flames. She went on remorselessly. "Do you know about the girls in the Temple of Love, Colonel?" "Of course I know there are temple maidens, but what of it?" Fenn turned to Sududu. "Tell him what you told us." Tenat listened with mounting horror to Sududu's account. By the time she had finished, his expression was bleak. "I had no inkling that atrocities such as these were being perpetrated on our young women. Of course I knew that some of the girls were being taken to the Cloud Gardens. Indeed, I escorted some. But they went willingly. I had no idea that they were being sacrificed to the goddess, or that cannibal rites were being conducted on the mountain." "Colonel, we have to take them with us. We cannot leave them to the Jarians," Merrin broke in. "I have already sworn an oath that I will do everything in my power to set them free and take them with us when we escape from Jari." "Here and now I make that same oath," Tenat growled. "I swear in the name of all the gods that I will not leave this land until we have freed those young women." "If we must wait until the harvest moon, how many more will be sent up the mountain before then?" Fenn asked. The men were silenced by her question. "If we act too soon, we will lose the element of surprise. The Jarians will immediately unleash all their forces upon us." "What do you propose, Fenn?" It was Tenat who had spoken. "Only the girls with child are sent up the mountain," Fenn pointed out. "From my own observation, I know that is true," Tenat admitted. "But how does that help us? We cannot prevent them conceiving if they are being treated as playthings by many men. Perhaps we cannot prevent it, as you say, but we can halt the growth of an infant." "How?" Merrin demanded. "As Taita did for Sududu, with a potion that induces miscarriage." The men thought about what Fenn had said until Merrin spoke again. "Taita's medical bag is in the house at Mutungi. We cannot return to fetch it. I know which herbs he used to make the potion. I helped him gather them." "How will you get these medicines to the women?" Tenat asked. "They are guarded by trogs." "Sududu and I will take them to the temple and explain to the girls how to use them." "But the trogs and the priestesses, how will you avoid them?" "In the same way that we hid Sududu from Onka," Fenn replied. "A spell of concealment?" Merrin exclaimed. "I don't understand," Tenat said. "What are you talking about?" "Fenn is the Magus's initiate," Merrin explained. He has taught her some of the esoteric arts, and she is far advanced in these skills. She is able to hide herself and others behind a cloak of invisibility. I don't believe it is possible, Teenat declared. Then I will demonstrate it to you, Fenn told him. Please leave the fire and wait beyond that clump of trees until Merrin calls you back. Frowning and grumbling, Teenat stood up and strode into the darkness. Within minutes, Merrin hailed him, and Teenat returned to find him alone. "Very well, Colonel Cambyses, where are they?" Teenat growled. "Within 10 paces of you," Merrin told him. Teenat grunted and walked slowly round the fire, peering left and right, until he came back to where he had started from. "Nothing," he said. "Now, tell me, where are they hiding?" "Directly in front of you," Merrin pointed. Teenat stared hard, then shook his head. "I see nothing," he began. Then reeled back and let out a shout of astonishment. "Osiris and Horus, this is witchcraft!" The two girls sat exactly where he had last seen them. They were holding hands and smiling at him. "Yes, Colonel, but only a small act. The Trogs will be much easier to deceive than you were," Fenn told him, "for they are brutes of limited intelligence, while you are a trained warrior with a superior mind." Teenat was disarmed by the compliment. "She really is a witch. Teenat is no match for her." Merrin smiled inwardly. "If she set her mind to it, she could make him stand on his head and whistle through his arse."